Welcome to the Dirt Bike Church. A little disoriented here. It's been, it's been another one of those days. We ought to be used to it by now, right? All this mud and rain. Hey, though, it's still good. It's good to be here. And I'll tell you what, being that I live in Tennessee, it's nice to come up here where it's comfortable weather. I see people with sweatshirts on, so that's great. Lord, thanks a lot for today. Just thanks for the opportunity to come here to church at the racetrack. We're blessed to be able to do this, and we count our many blessings. And so would you just meet us here in this place? Give me the words to say, and just help us to tune our hearts into what you're trying to teach us this year during this time right now. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so I'm going to read a verse, and then we're not going to talk about it, okay? Here it is, 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 25. It says, "And David did as the Lord commanded him, and struck down the Philistines from Geba to Gezer." All right, now this year, you know that we've been going through this the series called Through the Ages and Through the Pages. It's a 13-week study on the Bible from the very beginning to the very end. 40 different authors, 66 different books, 1,500 years in the making. And so we started out in Genesis chapter 1. God created the heavens and the earth. Everything was good. There was one option to do bad. And of course, Adam and Eve did the same thing that any of us would do. They chose the bad option. And in doing that, they completely inverted the created order. All right, so now, as Paul says in Romans, we're born into sin. We only have one good option. Everything else around us breaks that relationship with God that we were created for. But there's one option to restore that relationship, and that's Jesus Christ. But to get to Jesus, that's what this book is all about. That's what we're learning this year as we go through the ages and through the pages. Because Genesis chapter 3, verse 14, God says to Satan that, hey, you are going to torment her offspring. You're going to bruise his heel. He's going to crush your head. We know that's Jesus. We know that 2,000 years ago, Jesus died on the cross. His heel was definitely bruised. But on the third day, he rose from the grave and he crushed the head of Satan, defeated death itself. An amazing story, an amazing journey, because in order to get there, we see how God preserved that promise, that was the original promise. And God comes to a guy named Abraham and says, all right, Abraham, I'm going to do my work through you. Lots of people, lots of land, the whole world's going to be blessed through you, Abraham. And so we've been on this journey how Abraham had some offspring. He had a son who had two sons who had 12 sons. They were a family, just a small family, and God put them into protective custody in the land of Goshen, just there at the northern end of Egypt. And there they were protected where they weren't absorbed by the nations around them, but instead, not only did they survive, but they actually thrived. And they became a nation, just like God said. They became a many, many people. Part number one of the promise is fulfilled. Many people. Now it's time for you to go take the promised land. Go and take the land that I've promised to your forefather Abraham. And so God raised up Moses, and Moses leads them out into the wilderness. And last week we looked at how Moses passed the reins. He passed the torch on to Joshua. And Joshua leads them across the Jordan River. And they go and they take possession of the promised land. They're going into. Last week when we left off, they had defeated Jericho. And so we're going to pick up that story here today. They go in, and through Joshua's time, chapter 13, it says that they divide the territory. They go in and they conquer some of the lands that are there. But there's still some land that needs to be conquered. But what Joshua did was he leads them across the Jordan River, and he divides the land into 12 different places and says, you're going that way, you're going that way. 12 different areas, go into that land and inhabit it. Matter of fact, what God had told Moses back in the wilderness, God had pulled Moses aside and said, tell the people to drive out the inhabitants. When they get into the promised land, this is the land I'm giving them, drive out the inhabitants. Says, if you do not, those who remain will be barbs in your eyes and thorns in your side. That's Numbers chapter 33, that God says, drive out the inhabitants. If you don't do it, it's going to go bad. So Joshua leads them across the Jordan River. They start conquering. They start with Jericho. They move on to Ai. They have a little hiccup there, but they get it handled. They take on Ai. They take on so many different lands and the tribes. They start to scatter. They start to take possession of the promised land. But in Joshua chapter 13, it says that the territory, there is still territory that needs to be conquered. They've already defeated Jericho, Ai. There was an Amorite alliance, which is a really cool story about how the sun stood still for an entire day. But still left in the land, this is all that remains in the land yet, all the regions of the Philistines. And the Philistines were apparently a pretty big country or a pretty big group of people, because they had five different kings. There was Gaza and Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. There were a few other people there that needed to be taken care of. The Girgashites, the Canaanites, a couple other parasites and termites. There were a few of those left, but mostly it's the Philistines that have the land right now. We come to the end of Joshua. After all these things, Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died being 110 years old. This is the last chapter of Joshua. It says, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua and had known all the work that the Lord did for Israel. Through the ages and through the pages, we turn the page. We come to the book of Judges. In the book of Judges, it starts out saying that once Joshua had died, the people, they forgot about the Lord their God. Matter of fact, here's what it says. Joshua had left them instructions that this is the territory that you're taking. Drive out the inhabitants. But the book of Joshua starts out by saying, Judah took possession of the hill country but could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain. Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites. Manasseh did not drive out Ephraim. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of the land. And then it goes on to say, and there arose another generation after Joshua and his generation that did not know the Lord or the work he had done for Israel. They went after other gods from among the gods of the people who were around them and bowed down to them. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers. The reason that we're doing this through the ages and through the pages this year is because a few years ago, actually it was back in 2004, there was a book that was written. The title of the book was called The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. It was written by a guy named Sam Harris. Sam Harris wrote that book as a response to 9/11, what happened in New York City on 9/11. He said, this was all done in the name of religion, and all religion is bad because we are a sophisticated people. We don't need superstition in order to survive. We don't need this superstition. We have science and we have reason. So we don't need all this stuff. Matter of fact, Islam and Christianity and all that stuff is just about hate. Well, 2 years later, the God Delusion came out by Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins, this is where he called God a moral monster. And he refers to passages like this, drive out all the inhabitants. God, he's just a moral monster, thinks that he's better than everybody else. Well, it was right during that time, 2006, that's when I hit my knees in full surrender and said, God, I am all in. Been a Christian since I was 12 years old. Been living wild. Been doing my own thing. Living by my own rules. But man, I've train wrecked my life. I'm all in for you. So I'm serious about, first thing I do is I read the Bible cover to cover and I'm reading these things. But at the same time, these guys, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, along with a couple others, Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett, they've become known as the Four Horsemen. Kind of a pun on the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse in Revelation. They call themselves the Four Horsemen, and it's known, their movement is known as the New Atheist. New Atheism is what it's called. It's the same as old atheism, that there is no God. But these are known as the New Atheists, and they took this country. As a matter of fact, Richard Dawkins, being from England, took the world by storm. And all these books were written, all these articles, all these newsreels, they were invited on late night television and all kinds of places. And they start bringing to attention that, hey, this book, full of myth and superstition, it contradicts itself. God of the Bible, who there is no God, but if he was real, he's a moral monster. And how can you take this stuff seriously? And it made me wonder. And as I wondered, I started digging into it. And then I realized that, you know what? I've been in church all my life, and I never learned how to read the Bible. That's why we're doing this. On this series, right here on GNCC, of all places, a little racetrack. We get to go through the ages, through the pages, to learn the story of God. How when you understand the story of God, you find out how this all actually fits. Drive out the inhabitants. Why? Because I'm doing a thing. You remember, when Moses was in the wilderness, and he goes to Mount Sinai, he goes up on Mount Sinai, and he gets the Ten Commandments. He gets 603 other ones. He comes down. It's the law. Oh, man, that God, he is a moral straitjacket. No. We learned that the law had civil function. Like, hey, if you build a roof and you want people up there, you got to build a railing around it. Building codes, you know, there's civil law. There's ceremonial law, so that you understand that I am God. You are distinct. That's why the clothing can't be made of wool and a cotton at the same time. You can't mix the fabrics, because when you take the promised land, you're not going to mix with the people, because you are separate, you are distinct. I am doing a thing. Matter of fact, the way that we would put it, the way that Paul put it, was that the law was a tutor. The way we would put it today is the law is a set of guardrails to guide you to your final destination, to keep you on track. You cross the Jordan River, you drive out the inhabitants, because you're my special people. I have a plan, I have a purpose. So we pick up the story here. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers, just like he said he would. You don't drive out the inhabitants, I'm going to get your attention one way or another. And they were in terrible distress. Then the Lord would raise up judges who saved them from the hand of those who plundered them. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. Remember talking about those guardrails to arrive where? To Jesus. In 33 AD, when Jesus dies on that cross, is buried, and rises again on the third day, that's what we're driving towards. We've got these guardrails to keep us on track, to keep the nation of Israel intact, so that they know God, Yahweh, Jehovah, the creator of the entire universe. But what's the deal with the guardrail? You're on a windy mountain road, you're not paying attention because you're texting, and you hit a guardrail, and it bumps you back on the road, you damaged your truck, now you got to go to the body shop, but you're alive. You're back on track. You're going to arrive at your final destination. But if you want to, you can plow right through that guardrail. And then what do you need? Hopefully all you need is a tow truck, right? Because you're in the ditch. You're going to need a tow truck. So that's what God's doing here. It's like Israel. It's like they bump the guardrails, and then they just smash right on through it. And God's like, okay. They're like, God, help us. We're in the ditch. I don't know how I got in the ditch, but we need your help. And God's like, all right, I'll send you a tow truck. And here's how he would work it with these judges. He would send them. Matter of fact, the first thing that happens is that in chapter 3, Judges chapter 3, it says that Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, the Lord allowed the king of Cushan to conquer them. For 8 years, the people of the Lord cried out, and the Lord raised up Othniel to judge them. Othniel ruled over Israel for 40 years. As long as he was the judge over Israel, Israel did what was good in the sight of the Lord. Othniel dies, the people. You read next, they did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord raised up Eglon of Moab for 18 years. And finally, after 18 years, Israel, they cry out, God, we're in the ditch. Send us a tow truck. And God sends them Ehud. And then there's Deborah, and there's Gideon, and a few more. And we finally get to Judges chapter 13, which is where we're going to take our story today. Judges chapter 13. This is 300 years after they've entered the promised land. So they're 300 years removed from that Jordan River crossing, and the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. There was a certain man named Zorah of the tribe of the Danites whose name was Manoah, and his wife, and we don't know her name, we just call her Mrs. Manoah. Mrs. Manoah could not have children. An angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, behold, you haven't been able to have kids yet, but you are going to conceive. You are going to bear a son. Therefore, be careful. Don't drink any strong wine. Don't drink any strong drink. Don't eat anything unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. No razor will come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. And he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Yes, we're talking about Samson tonight. You've heard about Samson. Samson. The Nazarite vow, if you go all the way back to that conversation in the wilderness that Moses had with the Lord, Numbers chapter 6 talks about taking a Nazarite vow. If someone wants to set themselves aside, consecrate themselves, nice fancy church word there. If you want to consecrate yourself to the Lord for a period of time by taking the Nazarite vow, there are three things that the Nazarite vow entails. Number one, no wine, no strong drink. Matter of fact, you're going to take it so seriously. And what's the purpose of taking this Nazarite vow? It's just to set yourself aside to restore that relationship with God. Matter of fact, there's no time limit on a Nazarite vow. It could be for 30 days, it could be for a year, it could be for 2 years. It was unheard of to be for life, but then comes along Samson. Three things though. No wine. Take it so seriously that you're not even going to touch the grape. You're not going to eat the grapes, you're not going to eat raisins. Nothing to do with the grape that makes the wine. Why do you think that is? We all know that the New Testament directive is don't be drunk. We know that the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. When we're drunk, we don't have self-control. And so that inhibits our relationship with our Creator. And so the part of the Nazarite vow is, all right, we're just going to avoid that altogether. No questions at all. Just avoid it altogether. Number two, don't touch any dead bodies. Nothing unclean. Remember, in the Garden of Eden, everything was perfect. The penalty for sin, if you eat of that fruit, you will surely die. You're going to consecrate yourself to the Lord. You're going to have this relationship with Him. We're going to focus on what He's trying to do in your life, not on the penalty for the sin in your life. Don't touch anything that's dead. Matter of fact, if your mom or your dad dies, you don't go to the funeral. It's that severe. It's that purposeful. It's intentional living. I actually kind of like this because as a Christian, intentional living has a lot to do with our relationship being restored with and walking with God on a daily basis. No wine, no dead bodies, no haircuts. Razor, dude, shall not touch your hair while you're under the Nazarite vow. No haircuts. Now, why would you think that is? It's an outward, visible sign of what you're doing. It's like, hey, man, God's doing. What's up? What's up with that Samson dude, man? He's got long hair. Oh, he took the Nazarite vow. Okay, I get it now. I see that now. Matter of fact, Jesus, He put it this way, not regarding the Nazarite vow, but just in regards to living. He said, let your light so shine before men that they will see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. As a matter of fact, you're supposed to live your life in such a way that people will see that you are different. The Nazarite vow, no haircut. People will see that you are different, that God is doing something in your life. And so the angel comes to Mrs. Manoah and says, your son is going to be a Nazarite from birth. He shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Now, I say it all the time, on purpose, for a purpose. Talk about having your purpose laid out. He will begin to save Israel from the Philistines, who they've been indebted to for 40 years. Well, the first thing that we read, the woman bore a son, called his name Samson. And the young man grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. Chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah, a Philistine city. He went down to Timnah. He saw a woman there of the Philistines. He came up and he told his father and mother. He said, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now go get her for me as my wife. Now hold on a second. The whole thing in Deuteronomy chapter 6 is like, you're not going to marry them. Your daughters are not going to be given to their sons. Your sons are not going to be taking their daughters. You're not going to intermingle with them because I have a plan and a purpose for you. We got these guardrails set up. You're not going to mingle with them because I'm doing this thing here. You're going to grow into a great nation with lots of land. The whole world's going to be blessed. Samson, I have a purpose for you. Yeah, I want to marry this Philistine woman. No! Don't you remember? God said He's got a plan for you to begin to frustrate the Philistines, and you want to marry one? That's exactly how his parents respond to him. Like, no, you can't do this. Now here, chapter 14, verse 4, is the verse that completely threw me, kept me from talking about Samson for years. Because here's what it says. This is one of those four horsemen verses, okay? Like, God is a moral monster. He's impossible to understand. Right here. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. Wait a second. Samson says, I want to go sin. I want to marry that woman from the Philistine territory. His parents are like, no. But they didn't know it was from the Lord. Now, James, the half-brother of Jesus, says, let no man say when he is tempted that he is tempted of God, for God can tempt no man. He's not tempted by evil, neither does he tempt anyone to do evil. So how could this be from the Lord? Well, James goes on and he explains, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Samson was already tempted. He'd already gone down there. He already had the temptation. And God says, okay, Samson, if you're not going to live into the purpose for which I created you, my purpose still remains. If this is the way you want to do it, fine by me. My purpose remains. Continue on with the story and this will become crystal clear. So Samson went with his father and his mother to Timnah to go down and see this woman that he wants to marry. They come to the vineyards of Timnah. What grows in a vineyard? Grapes. That's right. Grapes growing. What's the first rule of Fight Club? I mean, the first rule. I watched Fight Club the other day. Hey, don't talk about that. First rule of the Nazarite vow. No grapes, right? No grapes. So Samson goes down to Timnah, to the vineyards of Timnah, and it says later on his parents are not with him at this point, Behold, a young lion come toward him roaring. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. Now, I am completely unaware that you could tear a young goat in pieces. However, it must not be that hard, because Samson grabs hold of this lion and tears it to pieces. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Why not? Because he was in a vineyard. He didn't want to hear all the nagging. What were you doing in a vineyard? Don't you know you're a Nazarite? God has a plan for you and a purpose for your life. I don't want to hear it, Mom. I want to marry this girl down to Timnah. So they get on down to Timnah. She was right in Samson's eyes. So after some days, he returns to take her as his wife. On the way down to Timnah, it says that he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. Rule number two, no dead bodies. He turns to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, bees had formed a honeycomb in there. And he dipped his hand in the carcass and he pulled out the honey and he ate it and it was sweet. And he gave some to his mother and his father. And he did not tell them where it came from because he didn't want to hear the nagging. They get on down to Timnah. They start having this wedding festival. The Philistines, they realize that, oh, Samson, he doesn't have any friends. We've got this big wedding going on. This wedding's going to go on for over a week. He needs to have groomsmen. So they give him 30 men to be his groomsmen. And Samson's like, well, I didn't really need any friends, but since he gave them to me, I'm going to have a little fun with this. He pulls his groomsmen aside. He says, all right, I'll tell you what, guys. I'll riddle you something. You answer my riddle, I'll give every single one of you a new suit of clothes. I'll give you an Armani suit, Brooks Brothers, whatever you want. I'll give you a new suit of clothes. However, if you can't answer my question, you, each one of you is going to give me a new suit of clothes. The 30 men are like, well, how hard can it be? You're on, Samson. What's your riddle? Samson says, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. Tell me what it is. I'm like, what? He says, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. It's simple. They're like, no, it isn't. We have no idea what that is. They argue about it for three days. Finally, on the fourth day, they come up to Samson's new wife. And they say, man, you need to get your husband to tell us what the answer to that riddle is. She comes to him and says, Samson, honey, baby, sweetie pie, we're married. And you don't love me because you won't tell me the answer to your riddle. He's like, well, of course I'm not going to tell you. I haven't even told my mom and my dad what it is. And he wouldn't tell her. The Philistines come back to her and they say, look at here, woman. If you don't tell us the answer to this riddle, we're going to kill you and your father and your mother and your brothers and your sisters. We're going to burn it all down. And so she pesters and she nags Samson until he finally tells her. The seventh day of the wedding festival comes. The 30 groomsmen, they come up to Samson and they say, yeah, that riddle that you told us? Well, how about this? What is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And Samson, he's a classy guy. He says to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have figured out the answer to my riddle. I'm not married. Even I know that's not something you say about your wife, all right? If you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have figured it out. He says, fine, a bet's a bet. He goes down to a neighboring town. He kills 30 Philistines, takes their clothes, gives them to the men in Timnah, and he stomps home in a temper tantrum. Leaves his wife there. He just goes home to mommy and daddy. He's mad. And I'm laughing about this because what did God say? He will begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Israel had been enslaved to the Philistines for 40 years. You know what's different about this passage? Every other time that God sent the tow truck, every other time he sent a judge, it says that the people cried out to the Lord. Chapter 13 starts out, the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord gave them in the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. There is no, the people cried out. Interesting. And God says, I'm going to raise up a tow truck anyway. Samson, go, because I have a plan, I have a purpose. Samson's like, no, I don't care about your plan, don't care about your purpose, I care about that girl. All right, fine, have it your way. Lots of drama in Samson's life. He stomps home, he goes home to mommy and daddy. He gets lonely, he gets to thinking about it. He's like, you know what, that girl, she sure was hot. She was crazy as a loon, but she was pretty. He goes back down to Timnah. He goes to the girl's house, to her father, and he says, hey, I'm here for my wife. And the father's like, what? Man, I thought you hated her. I gave her away to your best man. And Samson's like, oh, no, you didn't. He's like, I cannot be held responsible for what I'm about to do. He goes, he catches 300 foxes, he ties them together in pairs, lights their tails on fire, sends them out through the grain fields. The grain fields catch fire, the towns catch fire, the silos catch fire, everything's burning. The Philistines look at each other and they say, who did this? It was Samson. Samson the Israelite. Well, why did he do this? Because of that situation over in Timnah. So the Philistines go over to Timnah and they kill the girl and her father and her whole house. And then Samson's like, oh, no, I can't abide by that. That's wrong. I'm going to take care of business and then I'm just going to quit, okay? And so it says that as he goes down there, he goes to Timnah. Sorry, I've lost my place here. He goes to Timnah and he strikes them hip and thigh with a great blow. He takes care of business in Timnah. He frustrates the Philistines for sure. After that, he goes down, he stays in the cleft of the rock at Edom. The Philistines come up because he killed half the town. The Philistines come and they're looking for him. And the men of Judah say, you know what? We know where he's at. And they come up to Samson. They come up to him where he's hiding at in a cave. The men of Judah, 3,000 of them, went down and they said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that you have done to us? Remember what I said, that there's no cry out to the Lord? Matter of fact, it's worse than that. Not only did they blast through the guardrail, they end up in the ditch. They put that sucker in four-wheel drive. They're like, okay, this is where we're at. The Philistines are rulers over us. I guess that's just how it's going to be. Samson, what have you done to us? Why are you causing trouble? Don't you know that these guys are in charge of us? And Samson says, fine, if you have to deliver me over to them, do it what you got to do. Just you don't hurt me yourselves. And they say, okay. So they tie him up with rope. They bring him to the Philistines. As soon as he gets in front of the Philistines, he breaks the rope like twigs of thread, grabs the jawbone of a donkey, and kills 1,000 of them. Takes care of business. The Lord's purposes, he will begin to deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. The Lord's purposes are starting to come into focus now. We fast forward to the end of Samson's life. Samson's been ruler. He had judged Israel for 20 years. During that 20 years of Samson being judge, the Philistines never made a move on Israel. They couldn't because Samson was there. They knew to respect and be afraid of Samson. They didn't do anything with Samson as he was there. At the end of that 20 years, this is the famous story of Samson and Delilah. Samson, yet again, he goes to a Philistine city. He sees a girl. He likes her. Her name's Delilah. The men of the city, they say, you know what? Delilah, we have an opportunity with you here. We're going to pay you a ton of money if you will find the source of Samson's strength. So Delilah comes to him and says, Samson, what is it that makes you so strong? At this point, we're like, well, Samson, he's not going to tell her. He's not going to tell her why he's so strong. And so Samson, he tells her a little lie. He says, well, if I were tied up with 7 brand new bowstrings that had never been strung on a bow before, I would be as weak as any other man. She's like, oh, okay. Well, that's just nice to know. He takes a nap. She's stroking his hair. He's got like 20 feet of hair. She's brushing his hair. He falls asleep. He wakes up when she says, Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. While he was asleep, she tied him up with 7 new bowstrings. Samson, the Philistines are on you. He jumps up. He breaks the bowstrings. He takes care of business. And we laugh. We're like, yeah, of course he's going to do that. She's mad at him. What did you think he was going to do? She's like, you don't love me. You didn't tell me the truth. He's like, no, I sure didn't. If you tied me up with new rope, I would be as weak as any man. Same thing. He falls asleep. She ties him up. Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He jumps up. He breaks the ropes. He takes care of business. She's like, you hate me, don't you? Why won't you tell me? Well, I'm not going to tell you because you're crazy. You're trying to get me killed. He's like, I'll tell you what. I got lots of hair. I think he's having fun with her at this point. I got lots of hair. If you were to put my hair, weave it through a loom, I'd be stuck there. Nobody could do anything to me. He falls asleep. She weaves his hair through a loom. Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He jumps up. He breaks the loom in pieces, crushes all of his enemies, and she cries. Of course she does. Samson, what are you doing, man? Get out of there. Why? Why do you got to stick around? I'll tell you what, because you know the end of this story. Everybody, even if you've never been in church, you know the end of this story. He tells her the truth. He breaks down. He's like, you know what? I've been a Nazirite since my birth. Part of the Nazirite vow is you don't cut your hair. So my hair has never been cut. If you cut my hair, I'd be as weak as any other man. Now, is that the reason that he was strong? It's not. He was strong because the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. But he seemed to know that if he denied, that remember, that hair was the outward physical sign of an inward thing that was going on with him. He seemed to know that if he denied, just like Jesus said, those that deny me before men, I will deny before my Father. He seemed to know, if I get rid of that outward physical sign, it's not going to be good. So why did he tell her? That's always the mystery, but I'll tell you this. There was a poem that I had to learn when I was a little kid. So I don't even know if it's a poem. It's a thing. Sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, cost you more than you want to pay. Why does the addict always return to the bottle? Always go for the pills? They know it's going to ruin their life. They cannot help it. Sin. The penalty for sin is death. What happens with Samson? He tells her. She puts him to sleep. He gets a nice little nap. She cuts his hair. Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He jumps up to take care of business just like he always has. Did not know that the Lord had left him, and the Philistines, they capture him. And they bind him in bronze shackles. They take him to the prison. They gouge out his eyes so that he is blind, and they tie him to the stone mill where he just walks around in circles, and he does the job of a donkey, grinding out the mill. It says that at the end of his life here, towards the end of chapter 17, it says that the Philistines had a big party to celebrate their capture of Samson. And they had this party at the temple of Dagon. Dagon was a demon god. And so they had this huge party, this big, big, big stone temple, had pillars in it. They're having this party. There's 3,000 of them there. And they say, bring in Samson so we can make fun of him. And so a servant boy or a slave boy drags in Samson. And Samson, at this point, anytime I ever heard this story as a child growing up, I always had the impression that at this point in his life, he hits his knees in surrender and he says, God, I have been so selfish and so narrow-sighted all my life, and I realize that I've missed your purpose for my life, and I really want to be useful for your service, and I want to live into your plan for my life, so just give me strength one more time so I can do something for you. That's the way I've always had it in my head, and that's not at all what Samson said. You know what Samson did? He did the same thing that he'd always done. It was always about him. It was always about him. Matter of fact, he says, Samson called to the Lord. He said, O Lord God, please remember me and strengthen me only this once, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. I got to get even for losing my sight. And God, yet again, what was his purpose? That he will begin to deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. And God again says, okay, Samson, that's the way you want it. We'll do it your way. My purposes still prevail because I am preserving this nation. I am keeping this nation intact to arrive at 33 AD so that my son can pay the penalty for the sin of the entire world. We'll do it your way because we're still going to get there. Samson says to the servant boy, hey, aren't there a couple pillars that hold this place up? Take me over to the pillars so I can rest, so I can lean up against them. I'm tired. Goes over there and he prays. And God, the Spirit of the Lord, comes upon Samson. His strength returns. And he pushes the pillars apart. And the whole temple collapses. Matter of fact, it says that the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he had killed during his life. The purposes of the Lord prevailed. Even with an unwilling participant. I'm going to flip back over to 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 25. And David did as the Lord commanded him and struck down the Philistines from Geba to Gezer. We all know the story of David, right? David was a man after God's own heart. David, when he was just a teenager, probably about 16 years old, he comes out and there's the story of David and Goliath, right? Goliath of Gath, the big giant Philistine. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should come against the armies and defy the Lord God Almighty? That David who wrote, search me and know me, O Lord, wasn't perfect. But every time he made a mistake, every time he sinned, he hit his knees in repentance. And he said, restore to me the relationship that we once had. God, I want to live into the purpose that you have for my life. What a huge, huge contrast between Samson, the unwilling participant, God's purposes prevailed, and David, the willing participant, God's purposes prevailed, and David got to be a part of the greater story because with David, the Philistines were fully conquered. David took care of the Philistines. Matter of fact, under King David, the kingdom expanded. You know, when the Israelites, they crossed the Jordan River and they did not drive out the inhabitants. Their promised land is this big and they did not drive out the inhabitants. And they have all these problems. King David, the willing participant in the greater story, expanded the kingdom of Israel to the largest that it would ever be in all of history. Who do you want to be? The unwilling participant? God's purposes prevail. Or do you want to live into, because this story right here, through the ages and the pages, this story continues. And you and I have the opportunity to live into it yet even today. God, thank you so much for this opportunity to be at this racetrack. Beautiful place right up here in New York. We look around, we see the hand of your creation all around us. We acknowledge that there is a God despite what so-called intelligent people around us say, that there is no God, that this is all an accident. We know that you are God. And we commit our lives to you. And we say, would you just meet us where we are? All of us could handle a closer relationship with you, including myself. Show me your ways, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be with you. Have a great race tomorrow. If you need anything, my name's Chuck. Come see me. Thanks a lot.